I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal, and today our guest is Kimberly Patillo de Cossar, the co-head of M&A at White & Case in New York. Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, David. Happy to be here.
So we're going to talk about your career arc on today's podcast, how you came to the law and came to practice in M&A, how you have balanced your work life and your life outside of work, your decision to switch firms, and what you do outside of the office. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the law.
Yeah, so I graduated undergrad and went to work as an HR manager at GE right out of undergrad, and with parent pressure who said you can't be an HR manager forever, decided to go to law school thinking that I was going to be a labor and employment lawyer because I had been working in HR with labor and employment lawyers and thought that seemed like a reasonable path forward. And so decided to go to law school while still working. So I worked my first year of law school at GE as an HR manager. And my 1L summer then left GE and went to go be a labor and employment lawyer at a law firm and hated it. It really was quite painful because it was entirely litigation. I researched and wrote all summer, didn't see one thing resolved, and quickly decided that that wasn't for me, but was in law school and was going to be a lawyer. And so I had no idea what anything else was in the law. I had no idea what corporate law was, but it was not litigation. So I figured that must be the path for me, and went through the hiring process as most of us did back then, in person, on campus, interviewing with a bunch of firms, and decided on Cahill, primarily because they didn't have a rotational program for their summer associates. And so I knew I was never going to have to do litigation. And corporate seemed somewhat interesting and figured I would give it a shot. And as a summer associate, just fell in love with corporate work. And at Cahill, I spent most of my summer doing leverage finance work, which is what Cahill is best known for. No idea what an OM was or what EBITDA meant, but learned pretty quickly and just decided that that was for me. I loved the pace of corporate work. I loved deal work. It just ended up being a really, really good fit for me. And so went back to Cahill.
So talk a little bit about what you learned from your time at GE in HR and balancing having a full-time job and going to law school your first year.
So working my first year of law school was in large part an economic decision, and it actually made me quite efficient, I think. And I also think that having work experience and being, I don't want to call myself a professional at 22, 23, but having the diligence of showing up somewhere every day, going to work, and having that structure in place actually worked to my advantage my first year of law school. And I had limited amount of time to do both work and studying. So I grew up an athlete. I played softball in college. And so I think I had a pretty good skill set to manage a busy schedule. And that kind of continued on and served me quite well working and going to law school. But as it relates to being an HR manager, what I learned by doing that has actually served me really well throughout my career, and in particular in my current role, which is HR managers are tend to be thought of as the people. But I think what HR managers are people who are responsible for the careers and future of other people. And I learned that from my mentors at GE, that it was a tremendous responsibility and privilege to be able to chart someone's course. And so I took that very seriously, and I was responsible for at GE bringing and recruiting in engineers right out of undergrad and putting them into leadership rotational programs at GE, which were the future leaders of GE, and helping them navigate throughout their career, the early parts of their career, and rotating them through groups and helping them figure out where they were ultimately meant to be. And that's kind of what I do now and have done throughout my career with junior lawyers, which is helping them figure out what is the best fit for them, where they fit within an organization, how to help get the best out of them, and how to develop that talent. So it turned out to be a very good decision and a skill set that has served me quite well.
So you started Cahill right after graduating from law school. So how did you come to M&A?
So Cahill was a little bit of the Wild West in terms of there was corporate and litigation. There was no structure within those two practice areas. And so you sat at your desk, the phone rang. The partner said, are you available and interested in fill in the blank? And you either said yes or no. And I was a first year associate, and John Schuster, who was and still is one of my mentors and close friends, was a partner at Cahill at the time, called and said, hi, do you have any interest in working on an M&A transaction? And gave me a little bit of background. I didn't understand half the words he said, but I was a first year associate. And so you say yes, because that's what first year associates do. And he said, great, you're on a plane tomorrow to Lafayette, Louisiana to meet with the company. You're going to be doing diligence, sitting in on the management presentations, taking copious notes. And that's great. Good luck. And he sent me to Lafayette, Louisiana by myself with that mandate. And that was at the time when you actually physically moved your body and went into diligence, which was amazing. And I thought quite glamorous as a first year associate. And so I show up in Lafayette, Louisiana. They put me in a conference room. I'm pouring through boxes and boxes of documents, and companies close at 5:30. And they said, all right, that's it for the day. And I said, I'll have all these boxes to get through. I can't possibly leave. And they said, no, we're done for the day. We're going to a crawfish eating contest. And I thought, wow, that sounds amazing. So I went with the whole C-suite, the board of directors, to a crawfish eating contest in Lafayette, Louisiana. And so I was hooked. I just thought that everything about that experience, being on the ground, being in the room with the decision makers, making those personal connections with them over dinner, learning about a company in a very detailed and kind of intimate way, I just thought it was amazing. And so that was kind of all she wrote as it related to my path. Now, of course, I continued to do what was Cahill's bread and butter for quite some time. So I did a mix of capital markets work, debt finance work, M&A work, general corporate advisory, and was blessed with a number of really tremendous mentors and sponsors at Cahill who taught me how to be a lawyer in every way that you think about what a lawyer is, both substantively and probably more importantly, the personal connections that you make with your clients that make you the trusted advisor that makes them keep coming back to you.
And so talk about then the course of your career as an associate and how you came to specialize in M&A.
Right. So I was doing the mix that I just described for quite some time and then got seconded to one of our corporate clients who was in need of a deputy general counsel type because they were short-staffed. And so at that point in my career, I was probably a fourth year associate or so. I was thinking, is this what I want to do forever? Maybe I want to go in-house. I think that's something that many corporate associates toy with at some point in their career is, do I want to go in-house? Do I want to go be a banker? Do I want to do something that is adjacent to what we're doing? And so I thought it was a really good opportunity to see the other side. And so I went on secondment, which was a quasi-secondment. I was still doing some firm work and mostly client work for this client. And I really didn't like it. It very quickly realized that I am a deal junkie and that doing some of the more mundane day-to-day tasks that in-house counsel were doing, like negotiating the ADT security contract or the garbage pickup contract, were just not appealing to me, right? I wanted to be working on their biggest issues, thorniest issues, biggest deals in the boardroom. And so when I came back from secondment, I very boldly said to Bill Hartnett, who was the chairman of Cahill at the time, I want to be here. I want a future at Cahill. I want to make partner at Cahill, but I don't want to do any more leverage finance work. I want to just focus on M&A and quote company side work, which is how we referred to it at Cahill, which meant you represented companies and kind of whatever it was that they were doing. And he said, that's great. Yes, let's do that and build this practice together. And so I did. And we had a stable of really tremendous public companies and corporate clients. And I stepped right into that. And along with Bill and John Schuster and some others at Cahill, to whom I'm incredibly grateful always and owe my career to, they let me kind of lead the charge on all of those clients and doing their M&A transactions and doing their public company disclosure and becoming the trusted advisor to these general counsels and boards and companies. And I loved it. I continued to just really thrive in that environment and doing that type of work under their guidance and with their support. And then I made partner, which was amazing. And no sooner did I make partner, and by no sooner, I mean weeks, I was pregnant with my first child. And so Bill said, great, you're partner. Let's hit the ground running. We're going to really grow this practice because notwithstanding what anyone tells you, having the title of partner makes a difference, right? You overnight, when your title switches from associate to partner, immediately become smarter and more expensive to clients. It matters. It matters from a business development perspective. It matters from a credibility perspective. And so we were really excited to start building the practice out. And I went into Bill's office and said, that all sounds great. And I'm totally on board, but I also am pregnant. And so we'll be going out on leave towards the end of this year. And again, Bill's just a tremendous, not just a tremendous lawyer, but a tremendous human. And he said, great, that's amazing. Congratulations. We'll keep at it. And, you know, this is we're in it for the long game. And so we just kind of continued on and we were working really hard at building the practice and maintaining client relationships and doing more for clients where we could. I had my son and came back from leave, became the head of business development at Cahill. And no sooner did that happen than I was pregnant again with my twins. And that pregnancy was very, very challenging. And I ended up being on leave for almost a year, both between my pregnancy and afterwards. And the firm was tremendously supportive, and Bill in particular. And so we got through that period. I came back from my twins. And then it was, okay, now we're really going to hit the ground running. And we did.
A couple of things. So first of all, what do you enjoy about business development? And when in your career, and it may have been quite early, did you realize that was something you really enjoyed?
Yeah, so I have to give a lot of credit to the people who raised me from a pup as a lawyer, because even as an associate, they were bringing me to dinners, they were bringing me to the opera, they were bringing me to baseball games and having me join with clients. And so that just became part of my DNA as a lawyer, which is, you have to be technically exceptional. There's no question about that. That's why clients hire you. That's why they trust you. They need to know that you know your stuff. So that's first and foremost, you have to be prepared and excellent. But there is also this element, particularly when you're dealing with companies and CEOs and others in the C-suite and boards, they have to like you. They have to know you. They have to feel like you are relatable in some way. There has to be some connection there. And they taught me how to do that with clients in a very natural, organic way. And my husband will tell you that I'm a collector of people. I just love chatting with people. I love hearing their story. I love learning about them. and making connections with them. And that's really what business development is. It's connecting with people on some topic in some way that makes them want to have a conversation with you, that you want to have a conversation with them. And if they believe that you are really a competent lawyer, then it becomes very easy for them to pick up the phone to you all the time and talk to you about things big and small. And that's how I've grown my practice over time. And it's served me quite well. And I love the business development aspect of it. I love that there is a competitive element to it, which is also part of my DNA of just winning, right? There, you want to win the work, but it is really more about thinking about other people, thinking about what's best for them, how you can help them, and finding ways to add value to them, either personally or professionally, and connecting them with other people who could help them, connecting them with other lawyers within your firm who can help them, and just being of service. We are service providers, and I take being of service very seriously, not just services I can provide, but how can I help someone else elevate their business, their life, their children's lives, is how I spend my days in service.
You mentioned a secondment when you were a mid-level associate. From that experience and your experience at GE, how can you tell when an associate may be better suited for law firm practice or an in-house role? And then what's the difference between the kind of in-house role you describe, where the in-house lawyer may deal with an enormous range of issues, and an in-house role at a place like GE, which historically had a massive in-house department with highly specialized lawyers with very sophisticated practices? And then what's the difference between that, having that practice at a large corporate, and having a practice in the same legal area at a law firm?
Yeah. So I think you can tell pretty early on in someone's career if they are destined for partnership at a law firm or not. I think that there are certain characteristics of associates that you can tell if they are hungry enough, willing to make the sacrifice, have the business development chops, have the substantive chops to make partner at a law firm. I think that's something that you can usually assess when someone is a mid-level associate or so, or by that point, you know. And you also can tell the ones who maybe have all of that and don't want it. I had an associate very recently come into my office, an exceptional, exceptional lawyer, who said to me, "I don't want your office." They just don't want it. Notwithstanding that they could have it, they could be a partner at this firm. And so you have to meet people where they are, and you have to give them what they want, right? What will make them happy. That's part of our job as business leaders, is to make sure that you're doing what's best for your people. So we're now trying to find this person an in-house role because that's what they want to do, whether that's perceived lifestyle changes. And I say perceived pretty intentionally, because I think in-house jobs are not always the lifestyle choices people think they are. Or for other reasons, substantively, they think they like it better. They want to focus on just one industry, perhaps. Geographically, it's a better fit for them, whatever the reasons. But I think you can tell at some point if someone's destined for partnership or not. And I think as it relates to in-house roles, there is a very wide range. There are large corporates or financial institutions or otherwise who have massive legal departments. And so you could go into a quote M&A role within one of these organizations. But those roles, notwithstanding their M&A, are very different than how we operate as M&A practitioners as outside counsel. And we've recently seconded someone to an M&A role at a company, and they couldn't believe how different it was, right? They were not focused on digging into the nitty-gritty of the diligence. They were not turning the merger agreement and part of the negotiations around the merger agreement. They were reviewing the issues list, and they were thinking about the issues from a risk-based perspective, which is how companies are thinking about it, right? If I give this point, what is the risk to me and what is our risk tolerance and can we tolerate that? And from a purely business perspective, as opposed to the legal perspective. And so I think in-house legal folks tend to have a much more business-focused lens through which they are looking at M&A transactions, which is appropriate. I think that's their function. But it is very different than how we practice as external outside counsel. And so for some people, that's a really good fit. And we hope that they find those places and end up in the places that will make them happy. But it is very different. And I do encourage associates who are questioning, is this for me? Do I want to go in-house? To try and get a secondment, because I do think it is a really good way to explore those options in a safe way that is beneficial to both the client and the firm, right? Firms build a lot of goodwill through secondments. And the person we sent recently to an M&A role came back and had the same experience I had, which was she said, I thought that might have been for me, but it's not. And so I think it is a good opportunity for people to explore other parts of the law that are adjacent to what we do as external M&A lawyers.
And then talk about your decision to switch firms and the years of thought that went into that.
Yeah, so I was born and raised at Cahill. Some of my very, very best friends in the world are Cahill lawyers or former Cahill lawyers. And so it was a very difficult decision for me to leave home. But my practice was growing through all of the efforts we were putting into it. And the world is changing, continues to change on a minute-by-minute basis these days. But it's been evolving and the legal market has been evolving. And companies, which is where I spend most, if not all of my time, are and have been for quite some time becoming more global in nature. And it was becoming increasingly difficult to service global corporates on a platform that was purely US. And notwithstanding the very deep and strong relationships that I had with the C-suite, the general counsels, and the boards, it was a question in my mind at what point do I stop being relevant, where the personal relationship and the legal prowess isn't going to be enough to overcome the shortfalls in the platform because they need counsel in London or Australia or Paris or some other jurisdiction where they're doing work. And at some point, they decide, well, why don't I go to a firm where I can have someone who can quarterback all of that for me and be my person and can cover me more broadly. And it wasn't imminent, but I saw it on the horizon. And so started to think about where I could move the practice that would be able to better serve clients. And I was also thinking about my team. I have a tremendous partner in Ross Sturman. He and I travel as a pack. And we had three associates that we were thinking about and concerned about, the more senior of which just made partner at White & Case, which is wonderful. But thinking about the future of the group, both personally and professionally, and what was the trajectory for these associates? What was the trajectory for me and Ross? And we're young and have a long runway ahead of us. And so decided that we needed to move in order to stay relevant, to do all of the things that we wanted to do with our careers and that we wanted the associates to be able to do with theirs. And so we started to look, but as my husband kept telling me, he said, there's no universe in which you go into Bill Hartnett's office and tell him you're leaving, which was true. I'm incredibly loyal and have very deep affection for Bill. And it just wasn't something that I was prepared to do. But there came a time when Bill said that he was going to be retiring and stepping out of the chair role first and then ultimately retiring. And in many ways, Bill broke up with me first. And so it became a little bit easier for me to go in and say, we're leaving. we're going to go to another platform that we think can better service clients over the long term, is better for the associates. And I'm incredibly grateful for everything, but I think it's time, and I can't imagine being here without you, Bill, at the helm and in this boat with me. So it was a very, very difficult and emotional conversation, but it was the right choice for the clients first and foremost, but also for me and the team as well. And it's been an absolutely incredible move for us and for the clients. They are all really flourishing on this platform. We're doing things for them in geographies and in practice areas that we could have never imagined doing work with them. We remain their trusted advisors, which is wonderful and a blessing. And for the associates, as I mentioned, the most senior just made partner at White & Case and is working on a number of different firm matters and really high profile deals that he wouldn't have had an opportunity to do. And we have an associate going on secondment to our London office for a year. And it's just been a whole new world of opportunities for everyone on the team. And White & Case has been the just right place for us to land.
What would you tell a partner who's contemplating a move? What should that person focus on? And what should that person pay less attention to?
Yeah, so I think in every move, there is a push and a pull. And I think there has to be both in some ways. And I hope that for most people, the pull is more than the push, and that they're thinking about clients first and foremost, right? We are in a client service business, and without clients, we have no business. And so thinking about clients first and foremost, I think is the right way to be thinking about it. Where is it that I can best service them? Where is the best platform for them to get the best advice, whether it's for me or other practitioners? And there's also obviously the personal element. Where can I be happy? Where am I a cultural fit? Where do I like the people that I've met? But what I see quite often is there is more of a push than a pull. And I spend a lot of time interviewing lateral candidates. And I always ask the question, why us? Why are you looking to come here? And many times the answer is about all of the reasons they're leaving their current firm, right?
And so, which is not a great sales pitch.
And so I get it. I understand that everybody thinks the grass is greener, right? Everybody thinks that my firm is the worst managed firm and somewhere else will be better. And I can tell you that that's not true, that every place has its challenges. Managing a law firm is a really, really hard thing to do. And in particular these days, right?
Well, these are often people who are in law firms because they like the freedom that these organizations give them. I mean, the difference between GE and any law firm in America is just massive.
Correct.
In terms of a really structured, ordered organization where you probably don't have a lot of room to move outside of your box, and a law firm where, you know, you expect the partners to develop their own businesses.
That's right, right? Law firm partners are owners of the business. They own this business. And then you have law firm leaders who went to law school to be lawyers and were practicing lawyers and now move into leadership roles that they frankly were not trained. No one trained you in law school to run a $3 billion business with 3,000 employees in 44 offices in 30 something countries, right? That's not part of our training. So it's a really challenging thing. And of course, everyone thinks that someone else is doing it better or they will be happier somewhere else. And that's just human nature. But that push, you know, I just want people to pause on that, right? And really think about, why is it that I'm leaving, and am I leaving for the just right reasons, which should ultimately be in service of clients? Where can I best serve them? And where is a place that I will fit and be able to better service clients and grow my practice? And if there are some warts on the firm, if there are some things that aren't just right, that might be okay because that's all inward looking. We should be outward looking and thinking about clients and how to service them. And if you're at a place where you can do that really well and you have the potential to do that really well and you have a really good product to sell, let's be honest, we're all just salespeople. We are selling a product and then we have to deliver it. And if you can do that where you are, then maybe you are in the right place, notwithstanding the other drama or dynamics or other things that are going on internally. So I think there has to be both, but hopefully the pull is always much greater than the push in many ways.
You mentioned when talking about considering moving firms, your husband's perspective on the move. Talk about your relationship with him and how that's related to your practice.
So my husband is amazing. He is my number one fan. He is really just enabled me to have the career that I have. There is no question about it. My husband is an engineer by training. We met at GE. He has his master's in aeronautical engineering. He has his MBA from Wharton. He's the smartest, the kindest, and most wonderful person I've ever met. And he was an engineer turned developer turned banker. And when our children were young, we were both commuting in and out of the city. We were living outside of the city at the time. And we were on the bus home and we hadn't seen our children in days and decided that that wasn't sustainable, that both of us working banker and lawyer hours, not seeing our children for days at a time when they were getting to an age where they noticed that mom and dad weren't around. And when we were doing bedtime, we're asking for the nannies or for grandma and grandpa, which is amazing that we had that support system around us, but we just realized that it wasn't sustainable. We had three nannies working a 24-hour shift, basically, our parents. And so we made the choice on that bus ride home that one of us was going to step away from work. And I was at a point in my career where I was really taking off. He was at a point in his career where he was doing really well, but wasn't totally satisfied and had been thinking about making a move to something else. And so we made the tough decision for him to step away from work and to stay home. And that was fall of 2019, which frankly, we couldn't have timed it any better because several months later, and we were home trying to do Zoom learning with 3 and 5 year olds, which is comical in and of itself that we even attempted to do that. But that's where we were as a society at the time. And it honestly was the best decision we ever made and was really critical to my success and my continued success to have that scaffolding around me through my husband, through my parents, through all of our extended family and friends. I mean, the support network that I have built around me is absolutely critical to my success. I couldn't do it without it. And my husband is the center of all of that, holding everything up around me. And I am incredibly grateful for his support personally and professionally, which has enabled me to just soar.
Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for the time and the opportunity. It was great chatting with you, David.
For Drinks with a Deal, I'm David Marcus.